ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, good morning. It is also Hump Days with Hal.
Steffi.
Oh, what's that heavy breathing I hear? Why? Could it be?
The Hump Days. This is your chance to do the hump.
Hump
All right.
Days with Hal Sparks.
Yes! Yes!
Now, I know. It's been hump days all week, essentially. We've been humping it here since the signing of the bill, and Operation Attempt Not to Gloat has been going horribly, horribly bad. I apologize for that. I really have been trying to not overdo it with that kind of Obama celebration. But quite frankly, I've been doing terribly at it. Because this is, in the immortal words of Joe Biden, a big f***ing deal, okay? I don't know if you saw this during the signing ceremony, but there was a bit of a slip from the vice president, as there often is. And quite frankly, I think they're manufactured at this point. I am convinced that this is all a marketing scheme, that they have literally created a sitcom character around the idea of Joe Biden. He's not actually – this isn't something he would actually do. This is like, you know what we should do? We should have, like, right when you go over, you should whisper something to him, and we'll leave the mic open. It'll be hilarious. And they'll be talking about it for days, and they absolutely have. So for those of you that don't know, Joe Biden, when he introduced the President of the United States, he gave him kind of a quick bro hug and whispered in his in the far ear, away from the mic, in a vain attempt not to be heard, Mr. President, this is a big f***ing deal. So... way to go, Joe Biden. We have to come up with a good nickname for him, by the way. And I look to the people in the chat room at livestream.com/Al Sparks. We need to find like a foot and mouth Joe kind of, but in a positive sense, nickname for him. So open mic Biden. That's a good one. That's not bad. There's a couple of other ones, but it's really, A, he's a sweetheart, but B, that's just really funny. So, of course, for those of you that don't know, you may not be aware that, Sunday night around 11 o'clock, the Earth was struck by a meteor. That's not true. Zombies and blood rained from the sky, and the moon turned to sackcloth, and then there was zombies coming over the hills and giant spiders in mists. The president just signed health care. That's all he did. That's all that happened. Yes, the president signed it. But if you would listen to the right wing, man, their heads have been popping. And again, this is fascinating to me that they are so freaked out by the idea that the president is signing insurance reform, creating a system where people take their own money, put it into a private company of their choosing through a national exchange that gives them more choice and more affordable options, and in some case subsidizes people who cannot afford it, so that everyone in the country has affordable health care, and everybody is not only covered, but they're covered not just for their own benefit, but they're also covered for the rest of our benefit, so that if they go to an emergency room, that super expensive cost because they didn't go early enough to get treated in a way that could be, done in a more economically feasible way, that, you know, that now that cost is mitigated by the fact that they have insurance. But if you would listen to, of course, the right wing, the universe has been destroyed. And there's a pretty great one, Shepard Smith, who, you know, we're always on the fence about. He's our favorite quasi-closeted Fox News reporter. He actually has, I don't know if you are familiar with the New Orleans situation that we had a few years back when the unmentionable president was in place and he flew over it and waved. Shepard Smith was actually down on the ground and had several moments of actual humanity. Much to the chagrin of Roger Ailes and the punctacular craptocracy that runs Fox News. And here's another one of those moments where Shepard Smith is talking to Michael Steele, the quixotic, fascinating goofball head of the RNC. Let's see if you can find that one. You got that one, Tony?
Leader Boehner called this Armageddon. You've talked about a loss of freedoms. The bill, said one Republican congressman from Texas, we now know, it's a baby killer, if we're to believe what he says about it today. Is this rhetoric helpful in these times, in this nation? And if not, how might it be changed to where both sides could make their points without leaving a level of division that I would like to know if you agree is not good for this country?
Well, look, can I ask you a very simple question?
No, I'd rather begin with that one, if you don't mind.
But this is the answer to your question.
Is this Armageddon,
that
Mr.
rhetoric
Chairman?
Is a reflection. That rhetoric is a reflection of what average folks out there are saying
Mr.
around
Chairman,
their kitchen table.
Armageddon? Seriously?
Yes. Listen to what the people are saying. This is what they're feeling,
Armageddon,
Chef. Why
Mr.
is this
Chairman,
so,
like
why is this so surprising
that?
To you?
Armageddon? Because
so
I read about Armageddon, and I'm not sure that they're,
but
these
Chef,
two things are
understand it from the perspective, Chef, understand it from the perspective of a small business owner who's
getting
who
a tax credit
someone.
And a tax break.
Oh, come on.
That's what the legislation
Chef,
says.
They're getting a tax credit and a tax break, and they're raising taxes some $560 billion. So what the government giveth, it taketh away before you even get it.
Right.
And that's the reality here. Small business owners aren't stupid. They know what this is all about, Chef. So I understand why you're sort of fashioning around soft rhetoric of the Democrat
Sir,
you know,
I was asking
point.
About the extreme rhetoric. Actually, I have
but
to take a break
extreme,
because the computer
Chef,
makes me take it. But I don't think that's fair, so I want to bring you back on the other side of the commercial, which I'm required to take, and we'll be back right after this.
Okay, buddy.
Okay, buddy.
Computer says no.
Look, he brings up the excellent point that the right wing, and specifically the Gush Limbecks of the world, are spewing that this is Armageddon, that this is the end of America. And what's Michael Steele's response? Hey, this is how average people feel. Yeah, a lot of those people feel that way because they've been lied to, that they've been told s about this bill. And I, you know, you can't say, well, hey, people who know nothing about it are very upset. So I'm going to use the language of people who know nothing about it to continue furthering my own political aims. This is exactly what they're saying. It's like all's fair in love and BS. So and by the way, this is a meme that they've been pushing for a long time. The hard part for them is going to be when it doesn't happen, when the world does not end, when Armageddon does not come. What are they going to do when the armies of zombie socialist nihilists, communist Nazi mustaches come up over the hill, crawling through the muck, chewing on the necks of our children, making them sign pieces of paper that give them the right not to be kicked off of an insurance form. I don't get it. I'm at some point I don't understand the connection to Armageddon and the fact that you can no longer be kicked off your health care. And by the way, I've been a lot of you, I've been in a position where many of the bills pushed through by the Bush administration, including, you know, the warrantless wiretapping and the elimination of habeas corpus and the Patriot Act, which was a bigger bill than this one, which was passed in the dead of night with no debate, that just was magically written in, you know, the weeks post 9/11, supposedly, like amazingly afterwards, we needed to pass this thing like that. And where were these folks when that happened? Where was this idea that this is the end of America? Because these are our rights and privileges. You know, the amazing part to me is that they're arguing that this is unconstitutional, and we'll get to some of that one of those clips. Do we have the clip of one of the senators was on saying that this is unconstitutional, and a lot of the Republican state attorney generals are filing suit. 13 of them, I think, one Democrat, and the rest of them are all Republicans, are all filing suit to stop this in its track because it's unconstitutional, because the government does not have the right to make you buy a service. That's the big deal. Okay, let's play the clip of the guy saying, you know, breaking down how it actually kind of is. You know which one I'm talking about, Tony? I think it's clip 3. I want to say three. Let's see if this is the right one. See, Tony and I are running this.
The only way people are going to fully appreciate what...
That's David Axelrod. Hold on. That's a good one, though. In that, this is David... They're asking David Axelrod about the fight leading up to this and how freaked out everybody was and how just the hyperbole and the overwhelming push to stop this thing. And he rightly says, and the polls bear him out right now. Well, let's play the clip.
The only way people are going to fully appreciate what reform is if we pass it and implement it, and it becomes not a caricature but a reality. And mm-hmm. I still believe that. So I think it will be easier to sell it moving forward than it was to this point.
Right. And that's by the way, that's David Axelrod on Charlie Rose talking about this. But there's the, I think it's the third to last, in the second group of clips, it's the second one. It's the one about the fact that, these state's attorney generals are coming out saying this is unconstitutional. The government does not have the right to give you, to make you buy a service. And here's the response from you'll hear it.
A public hospital or any hospital to take care of you in an emergency room for free. Joining right now is Nebraska Attorney General John Brunning. Mr. Attorney General, let me ask you this. On this question, what constitutional ruling requires hospitals to admit people who come in to emergency rooms, whether they were in a highway accident or they had a stroke or a heart attack, and those hospitals are required by law to treat them effectively, not just second-rate treatment, but treat them as long as they need treatment? What law requires that? And then I want to go to why you think it's unconstitutional to require a person to insure themselves against that possibility.
Well, it's varying state laws that require that, but ultimately this is a constitutional question. This is a Commerce Clause issue, and over the last 30 or 40 years, Congress's power has continued to grow and grow and grow, but this is a quantum leap. This is Congress now saying we're going to penalize you for inactivity. They've often regulated commerce between individuals, between states. This is the first time they're going to penalize people who...
Yeah, you're going to penalize people for inactivity. That's right. You mean the inactivity of not treating someone when they've been in a car accident or they've had a stroke or they've succumbed in a restaurant to some unknown illness? No. The Good Samaritan laws all over the country and the ruling that hospitals have to treat people, that's actually we got to take a break. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We're going to be talking to some of our callers. We've got Debbie Wasserman Schultz coming up in the second half, the deputy whip who made it all happen. Fantastic. And we'll be taking some of your calls. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. We are having a great time, and we're trying not to celebrate too much. We'll be back right after this with more of the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's a beautiful miracle of nature.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
You up for a round of word association? What do you think when I say incorporate your business or form an LLC? How about wills, trust, and powers of attorney? If you answered LegalZoom.com, brilliant thinking. But what if I said trademarks, patents, real estate, small claims, uncontested divorce, even bankruptcy help? I hope you thought of LegalZoom first for these legal documents, and here's why. LegalZoom empowers people like us, people with zero legal experience, people who may wonder if they can really create their own superb legal documents. You can. LegalZoom makes it happen incredibly fast and easy. They even have free customer support to help you. Remember, for personal and business online legal documents, think LegalZoom first. LegalZoom puts the law on your side. LegalZoom isn't a law firm, but was started by top attorneys to provide self-help services at your specific direction. And for even more savings, enter Stephanie in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
The Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and Chris and Jim while they are away on vacation. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us. Operation Try Not to Gloat is in full effect and failing miserable. For those of you who don't know, Yesterday, and I don't know how you couldn't, Barack Obama signed into law the Senate bill, which was passed by the House. Now the reconciliation part, the fixes that a lot of us think are necessary and were basically helped guarantee the votes in the House, is now moving into the Senate. The interesting thing is that in many ways the Republicans who are fighting it now, who are fighting it through process, are actually fighting all the things that they supposedly hated about this bill, about the Senate bill, including the Cornhusker kickback and Gatorade and all these cute little names that they gave everything that they didn't like, deals that were made in, with people like Ben Nelson in an attempt to secure their votes to get the Senate bill passed. That bill went through, was passed by the House along with this reconciliation bill, the third thing that they had passed. And then that is now back up to the Senate, where, of course, the Republicans are trying to stall it. Now, let's be absolutely clear. The Senate bill, as it stands, is now the law of the land. President Obama signed it yesterday. It's the law. Everything with the Cornhusker kickback and Gatorade, all the things that you don't like, they're all in there. They're still in there. It's only through this reconciliation bill that's going through the House right now that that stuff gets removed. And the Republicans are fighting that. They are jacking up the process with a lot of amendments to try and slow everything down, which is par for the course, what they've been doing all along. And on top of that, they are adding amendments in an attempt to send it back to the House so that it has to be voted on again. This is all procedural nonsense. It is strictly meant to hang up the works. They know the votes are there. If it went back to the House, it would get voted on and sent forward. Right now, Coburn, who's a member of the family and is one of these Just Say No Republicans of the highest order, has introduced an amendment to guarantee that no convicted sex offenders will be given erectile dysfunction drugs under the health care plan. Completely unnecessary. You can pass that as a separate law. I think that would sail right through. But he only puts it in an attempt to get this, you know, to delay everything. The interesting thing is, if you really thought that was important, you could have passed that through in a heartbeat 8 years ago. Where was Coburn when for the last 8 years when you could get when apparently rapists roaming the streets could just pick up free Viagra from their doctor? Where was this concern by Coburn then? Why was he not instituting this bill early on? I don't know. That's insanity. I want to take a quick call before we go to the break, because coming up after the break, we have Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who is officially awesome. Let's see. I want to make sure I'm getting to people kind of in order so we have these. Let's see. Cindy in Michigan. Cindy, you there?
Hi, Hal.
Hi. We just have a couple minutes. So
I had to go through this with my mom when I had to pick out her Medicare drug plan.
Right.
They wrote that plan to make it sound as if it were voluntary, but you had to pay heavy penalties if you didn't sign up by a certain time. And
right.
That penalty was assessed until you were no longer on Medicare, which meant when you were dead. And
mm-hmm.
So they wrote that bill the way that they're now suing about it. My attorney general in this state, his name unfortunately is Mike Cox, and
mm-hmm.
he's
unfortunately
for
him
governor.
Or unfortunately for his relatives or his children.
Well,
I've always felt
his,
bad about that. Like, don't you have if you have children and a name like that, don't you have sort of a responsibility to change it? You know,
well,
it's like
he's running for governor and he is a Republican, so I don't know, maybe it
right.
fits.
Mm-hmm.
And but he's suing based on, you know, that it's unconstitutional.
Right. We got to take a break. I want to thank you for your call, and that's going to be a consistent thing. When we come back from the break, we got Debbie Wasserman Schultz to talk about the WHIP plan and then going forward on financial reform, all sorts of important bills coming down the pike. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in on the Stephanie Miller Show. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome back. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph while she's away on vacation. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. Coming up after the next break will be Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who served as deputy whip during the healthcare process, and is also a fantastic, fantastic congressperson. We will, we'll be going to break early so we can get, to her after that, next break. But I want to go to Bob in Fox Island. Bob, thanks for hanging on.
Hey there. It's wonderful to have you there.
Oh, thank you. It's wonderful to be had here.
Well,
you agree,
you know,
chat room?
It'd be good to be had anywhere, but we're being had. And, although I'm a Democrat, I'm a progressive Democrat, and, I like the idea of pre-existing conditions, but there are no really protections that say they can't say, that's not what I want to say. I'm sorry. I'm concerned about.
But there are protections against being dumped because of pre-existing conditions, and there are guarantees that you're able to buy into a wider pool.
Can't they say? I can't deny you, but it's going to cost you $3,000.
No.
Okay. But I just ask this question though. Didn't we just sign into law the formation of another Pentagon-style bureaucracy that's going to subsidize the same health industrial complex that's been denying millions of people care and allowing them to suffer and die? Aren't we really paying that $447 million that could have gone into Medicare for All, improved Medicare for All, as the public option, which nobody seems to even be talking about right now?
Well, that's not true. Actually, Alan Grayson put forth a bill specifically to create a Medicare for All thing. So when you say nobody, keep in mind that there are Democrats working for that very thing. And I agree with you that a public option and very specifically a single payer system will at some point be the higher order of the day. I'm for it. However, this bill doesn't eliminate that possibility. It actually brings it closer. And it allows for, in the Senate, the creation of nonprofits in the exchange.
That whole thing about for nonprofits, there's something that's called an innovative clause, and what happened was they're saying, you're going to have those, they're setting up the exchanges by, I guess it's January 1st, 2014, but you know the one that allows for states to do the single payer, you know when they put that one in? That's 2017. So after you go through this big fight of putting exchanges together, do you really think too many states are going to stand up and say, oh, now that we've put all this work into this, 3 years later, we're going to come back and change it all into a single-payer system? They fixed the system.
In a lot of ways, that actually could be very well exactly what happens, mainly because as certain states start creating it, like California is leaning in that direction, that bill has come up several times.
They've signed it three times already.
And the governors won't let it through. Right. When you set up that situation and the exchange opens up, and you have a huge state like California or New York, a lot of people from other states are going to want to buy into that nonprofit system, are going to want to be a part of that, which is, based on taxes in those particular states. And in doing that, it may very well overload those systems, or the desire for it may be so broad that the states themselves come back and go, look, the nine biggest economic states are saying we want this to be a federal system so that we don't catch all the burden of this.
May I ask you a
question?
That
everybody starts chasing. And the reason it takes till 2014 and then 2017 is to create safeguards so that it doesn't become a rush to the bottom in certain states. Like, say, a crappy insurance company opens up in Iowa that doesn't actually provide much service and then keeps moving state to state, and people start buying into that because it's, their $20 premiums, or it's lowest possible thing. You have to create legal safeguards for that.
So why are Bernie Sanders and Kucinich and those guys so much opposed to them waiting till 2017? And haven't we just, it seems to me the Republicans should be really happy with this part of the bill, because aren't we really mandating the privatization of healthcare in this country? We've kind of entrenched that.
That's already there. B, it doesn't necessarily, because like I said, it opens up the potentiality for nonprofits to be put in this exchange. They were never there before. You couldn't, let's say a state set up a nonprofit that was not a single payer system, but they set up a state overseen nonprofit insurance guarantee for anybody to buy into that wanted to as competition. If that state did that, no other state, if you lived in another state, you couldn't buy into that before. Now in the exchange, you can. So let's say Delaware sets up this insurance exchange, and they're going to guarantee it's nonprofit, so they only have a 5% overhead instead of 25 or 40% overhead like the modern insurance companies have, and everybody wants to buy into the Delaware system, they can.
Have you seen,
that's impossible now.
Have you seen the press release that was just released, I think it was Monday, by the Physicians for National Health Program, PNHP? If you go to PNHP.org, you can find that press release, and it really explains a lot of the misinformation that's out there about this bill. Have you looked at it? Because you seem to be really up on it, and I really appreciate
Well, I've read the bill itself.
I've also
gone through some of the committee notes.
Margaret Flowers and Ollie Fine and people like that. But they went step by step. And these are very, very reputable doctors and people with PNHP. They're probably one of the best groups out there supporting, the public option as Medicare for all and the whole idea of really having a real nationalized program, not just...
Well, one of the reasons, by the way, just so you know, one of the reasons why the Republicans were having such a conniption fit about this entire thing, and I want to get to some other calls before we take the break. And
Thank you for taking
appreciate
the time.
Absolutely. One of the reasons why the Republicans were having such a conniption fit about this whole thing was because they know this is exactly where it leads. That this lays the groundwork in the future for through the reconciliation process. Now, because the insurance exchange and these kind of things are now on the books as law, it is completely feasible that the Senate can use reconciliation. The Republicans and the Democrats know that they only need 51 votes from this point on to carry forward on this kind of thing, because you're just modifying the bill once it becomes law. This reconciliation piece is, I think, the last part that actually needs 60 votes. It actually doesn't need it anymore. We're going to take a break because I want to get back and see if we can get Debbie Wasserman Schultz on the line. She had to be called away as busy, actually effective congresspeople are often wont to do. My name is Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph and the Mooks. We'll get to more of your calls after this break. 1-800-STEPH-12. We're streaming at livestream.com/HalSparks or halsparks.com/livestream. Pick your poison. And you can follow me on Twitter and get in the conversation there at Hal Sparks. So we'll be back right after this with Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Have no fear. Steffi's here. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph while she's away on vacation. StephanieMiller.com. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. On the line, we have a few callers. We're waiting for Debbie Wasserman Schultz to get her business done in the Congress and come back and join us. So until then, I'm going to get to your calls. We got Mike in Anderson Island, Washington. Mike, you there?
Hey, Hal. I'm kind of talking about the other guy from Fox Island, which is actually the next island over from where I live. We can see Fox Island from my backyard.
Right.
Anyways, you guys were talking about the single payer or nonprofit.
Right.
And I belong to a single payer nonprofit here in Washington. We have two, actually. We have a state run
nonprofit.
It's a nonprofit, but it's run by a state. But we also have group health. It's a co-op. It's a co-op, and it seems like nobody seems to know anything about co-ops, you know. And
right.
Group health is the biggest co-op in the country, and anyone can join it. And the cost is probably a third to a half what an insurance company is.
Right. Well, which is, by the way, why the idea of the exchange is sending the right wing into conniption fits. Because if now people in California or in Arizona or even, God forbid, Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia can now buy into Washington State's co-op.
Yeah, we have a reciprocity with
Kaiser Permanente, yeah.
Down in California. Mm-hmm. And somebody that's in group health, if they're traveling in California, for example, could take advantage of Kaiser's whatever they have to offer.
Right, they can use those services when they, if you go into a hospital. Yeah. In the same way that,
if I was in New York, visiting New York, and I got mugged in Central Park, I could go to an emergency room and be treated for $50.
Right.
I talked to him about that, and I asked him about, what if I'm in New York and I get mugged in Central Park? He says, well, you go to the emergency room, it costs $50.
What a shocking... Can you imagine what the rest of the country would be like if they had that kind of a freedom to walk around?
My biggest gripe about this this bill that they just passed is that it's going to give money, my tax money, to the insurance company. I don't want 1 cent of my money going to United.
Well, technically, all it does is offer the exchange. The creation of the exchange is what your tax dollars go to. The insurance companies themselves are not guaranteed these kind of customers. It's the people who buy into them, right? You know what really will be the work of this. Is and thanks for the call. I want to get to somebody else too, but a great conversation. What the hard work will be to make sure that people are aware that they can buy into these low cost co-ops. I mean, obviously the price will be very attractive because you'll be able to see that in the exchange. It will also list that you will be able to go online now because of this bill and see how much of your premium goes to executive compensation and how much actually goes to medical care, and that can help you make the same choice. And it looks like we have on the line Debbie Wasserman Schultz. It's true. Here she is. I think she's with us. Is it true? Okay, cool. I'm clicking. There we go. Nope, that is clearly not her voice. This is always... here we go. Hello? Is Debbie Wasserman Schultz? Fantastic.
I'm here.
Yay. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Yeah. By the way, I have been watching not only throughout this the lead up to the healthcare vote itself and the debates on the floor and stuff, but also afterwards. You have been such a great voice during all this,
and of course, in the
lead up to whipping this thing. I'm sure most of us are not even aware of the amount of work that took. our chat room is going crazy about you because you're so beloved. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, thank you.
It's true.
It was a team effort. And, yes, the whipping process is definitely one that is a combination of psychological and even physical interaction.
Right. It's true. Yes, the occasional hug, the occasional stare, the occasional neuro-linguistic programming. I sometimes want to feel like I want to teach a hypnotism course to all the Democrats because I guarantee the Republicans are taking them on the weekends.
That's exactly right.
I saw we all saw you on with Daryl Issa on the news and talking
on Sunday night.
Yes, and he was bringing up he was forcing more of these these right wing talking points that are so far off base. The president has said, let's see, in 2 months and 6 months, if the world has not come to an end, you will now know that everything they've been saying is crap. But how do you, going forward, their methodology now.
We've got their playbook. They opened the door to their locker room. We've got their playbook, and we're going to turn their playbook around on them. That they are going to continue to distort and lie and exaggerate what's in this bill, and the impact that this bill will have, you can see just by the results of yesterday's USA Today Gallup poll that shows that Americans now, by 8 points, are either enthusiastic or pleased that the healthcare reform legislation passed and is now law, because everyone in America wants to end abusive insurance company practices. Mm-hmm. Everyone in America wants to make sure that we can close the prescription drug donut hole. Who in America wouldn't want to make sure that young adults would stay on their parents' insurance until they're 26, or that we can end the practice of insurance companies dropping you as soon as you have a significant illness? So the Republicans are on the wrong side of this in terms of the things that people care about when it comes to health care, but they're also on the wrong side of it when it comes to fiscal responsibility also. And because they don't really know anything about being fiscally responsible, so it's sort of understandable that they would continue to spout falsehoods about
the content of the actual bill
on people, and the content of the actual bill. Exactly.
Right.
The bottom line is that this bill provides the largest tax increase through a tax credit to small businesses in history.
Right. You mean tax cut? But yes,
excuse me.
Yes, true. But the increase of funds, and quite frankly, you know, in 2009, 2010, even before the, you know, they're able to take advantage of the cost incentives of being able to use the exchange to lower their costs, they get a tax credit
That's
up to 50.
Right away.
Yes, 50% of their employees' health care costs, which is a stunning shift. And I think a great thing going into the election, that's my big question. We've been hearing this, and I heard Joe Scarborough just this morning. I mean, he's been flipping out about how great this is going to be for the Republicans going into the fall. I think that's madness. Christine Vandenhoevel was on saying that essentially the Republicans have now officially been on the wrong side of history on every major piece of legislation the last 50 years. From civil rights to now.
That's absolutely true.
How do the Republicans run on the things, on the repeal of this, once these elements are available? How do they, and how?
I think they do that to their peril, and you're going to see, which is fine with me. Mm-hmm. You're already seeing some of their most prominent strategists, like David Frum, who was President Bush's former speechwriter,
right,
who wrote a column the other day talking about how if this whole process was anyone's Waterloo, it's going to be the Republicans, because like you said, not only were they on the wrong side of history, but they're on the wrong side of the issue. They decided on brinksmanship. And put all the marbles, they were all in, put all the marbles in the defeat the bill basket, laid their stakes with the Tea Party, and came up short. But he said this morning, actually I saw him speak this morning on CNN, and he said, maybe that strategy would have been fine if it worked, but it didn't work, and now, you know, the American people are going to see what's in this bill, and even though he thought the bill was flawed, he said they're going to want to make sure that those benefits continue.
Well, and again, I think that's actually what they were fighting against all along. I think they were using hyperbole that they thought could,
exactly,
in populist rage, but what they really fear is the good elements of this bill becoming law and staying that way.
Absolutely. I said that the whole way through this debate was that the reason they were fighting so hard is that they knew if we won and we passed this bill, that there was no way that they were going to, that it was going to be very, very difficult for them to come back to power and take over the majority in Congress, because this was going to be the most significant legislation that we've passed in most people's lifetimes that are living today. I mean, I wasn't even born when Medicare passed. There was no way that the Republicans in the fall were going to be able to use health care reform as the boogeyman. Now, we have to also, we're doing a victory lap, and we're thrilled that this passed because of the good it's going to do for the American people. But we are also, as you know, redoubling our efforts on focusing on job creation, turning the economy around. And the economy is beginning to show signs of improvement. We think that'll gradually, as the economic experts are telling us, improve between now and the end of the year. And that combined with the feeling, the impact of healthcare reform, literally by September, is going to be a significant boost for our Democratic candidates across the country.
Yeah, and timing is everything in the political world, no question.
That's right.
And it's going to be fascinating that, and they, by the way, they do this on everything. Every single judicial nominee is the most liberal, most dangerous, most communist person that the president could possibly offer. Every possible bill that comes through, this is now the end of the republic. This is,
Well, nothing is absolute, and unfortunately, they treat everything as if it is.
Right.
We had so many opportunities that we gave them, that we begged for them. President Obama couldn't have extended the olive branch more often to ask them to sit down at the table, reach bipartisan consensus. There are more than 200 amendments that were offered by Republicans that are part of this legislation.
Right.
So,
and not one single vote.
No, not one single vote. At the end of the day, the substance of this bill is bipartisan. Unfortunately, the outcome was not. But that was their choice.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I've often said that, you can actually have a completely bipartisan conversation, conservative to liberal, on the entire spectrum simply within the Democratic Party. And that's largely what happened. You really did.
Yeah.
You had an old-fashioned.
We really are the Big Ten.
Yeah. The Democrats
really
actually.
The Big Ten.
Yes. Democrats actually had a conversation likened unto, 30 years ago between conservative and liberal. And now my question, and we've got about a minute left, is going forward, the the president says we should be, you know, selling this stuff so the American people are aware of what they're getting. Is that the next step, or do we move on with to,
No, absolutely. We are coming into a two-week recess where we're going to have an opportunity to reach out to constituents in our district. And I remember I was actually elected right after Medicare Part D passed. And I did a series of town hall meetings at the time to explain, as it was going into effect, to explain to my constituents how it was going to be implemented, what they needed to do, answer their questions, provided resources and the agency experts at my town halls to make sure that they would be able to get, you know, have direct on-the-ground answers. So that's what we're going to go out and do now. We've got to make sure people know the benefits of this bill. And you know,
we got to take a break. So, but thank you so much, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. You are amazing. I'm Hal Sparks. Yeah, absolutely. I'm Hal Sparks filling in.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It does feel good. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph while she's away on vacation. StephanieMiller.com for all your Stephanie-related questions. I have to tell you, we have to go into right-wing world a little bit. We have to really look at, you know, the other side, you know.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Of course, I mean the modern GOP. And luckily, to help us navigate those waters, we have, and we have to have, do you have his song ready, Tony? We got to have his cue ready. The lovely, the talented Carl Frisch from Media Matters. He's, wait, don't say anything, Carl, because we're waiting for Tony to get the song ready. Here you go. Ready? Come on. Here it comes. There we go.
Carl. Carl Frisch. Exciting. For Media Matters for America.
That's got to feel good. Carl, are you there?
I'm here.
Fantastic.
I was under the impression that America was over as we know it.
Yes, I know.
Test.
Yeah, I was. We were somehow shifted into Europistan.
right.
This combination of you know, where we would all have to wear a burqa as we went to the doctor and you know, say the Pledge of Allegiance backwards while drawing a pentagram on the floor to get ED pills, you know, and I'm still waiting. It's like Countdown to Armageddon. That's what we should have. We should have a big clock.
Well, I think the problem with the big clock is I think conservatives would be pushing to have one of those clocks that's digital, because they might not be able to read.
You can't read
clock.
Hands, right? That's true. That's an excellent point. We'd actually have to have a numeric. But it's not like, you know what? Quite frankly, between you and I don't think the clock would have affected them at all, anyways, because the debt clock hasn't scared them any. Remember
this
that thing?
True.
That thing. That yeah. They had that in New York City, and it went into overdrive like year two of the Bush presidency. It was already bad, but it was just like it started spinning so fast that the lights looked like fireworks.
They actually had to add extra numbers to it
during
the Bush administration.
Right. And I love how they blame Obama for all the, you know, the rise in the debt and you know, long term, because he finally put things like the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War on the books, so we couldn't pretend
right.
we weren't paying for it.
It's part of Bushnesia. It's part of Bushnesia.
Right.
Anything that happened during the Bush administration was the fault of President Clinton, and anything
or even
that,
Carter
that came after, right? and anything that came after, well, that must be Obama, including anything that happened the day before.
Right. Any bills that passed that we didn't like during that time were probably put there by Bin Laden as well, and reason.
Well, it was all part of Obama's plot when he was being raised in Kenya.
That's true.
And secretly placing birth announcements in the Hawaii papers to take over the government.
Right. You got to give. I mean. I don't know how they keep pushing that, because that speaks to such a long game that the Democrats have heretofore not had.
Yet it took 18 months to pass health care.
Right.
They could carry out a intricate 40-year plot to install this man as president.
Exactly. By the way, Go ahead.
The big problem is that anything, you know, it's just like every other conspiracy. Any evidence pointing to the contrary only shows how deep and devilish the conspiracy
absolutely
is.
Absolutely. Right. And the fascinating part is, you know, 18 months, is lightning fast in the world of politics, quite frankly. As much as
sure.
we've been watching this, you know, the sausage making go on, you know, with the initial implementation of Social Security and then the tweaks that have happened over the over the decades, this in many ways is another one of those situations where this is the first step, and that's the thing that scares them. I think they
right and yeah. And how long did it really take when you do consider those other decades? So
yeah.
The last 18 months of 70 years of trying to get this done.
Seriously. And you've got to know that the first black president and the first female speaker of the House are the ones who did it. Oh, God. Can you imagine what it's like to be...
Well, we know what they think. We
yeah.
heard what they yelled at them.
Yes,
when
the
they
N-word,
were,
the F-word, the spitting on them.
Right. That's what they think. and for anybody to say that that isn't what matters to these people, it's just foolish at this point. I don't know how many isolated incidents like this we can have for the Tea Party leadership and Republicans in power to say, well, they don't speak for the whole movement. Well, we've seen the signs. We've heard the threats. We've seen the spitting. We've heard the epithets. How many of these things are isolated incidents until we realize that this is part of a much larger pattern?
Right. No, yeah, no question. Did you hear, by the way, Representative Louie Gohmert's quote? Do you have that quote for us, Tony? The Gohmert saying he wants to – you know what the problem is was the creation of the Senate.
Since the 17th Amendment took out the last check and balance on usurpation of states' rights, it's time to get the balance back in place. We have 39 states upset wanting to do something and not have another unfunded federal mandate coming down their throats. This will do it. Let's get an amendment that gets the balance back into the country and the Constitution before
right.
this Congress destroys what's left.
So basically we need to rescind the 17th Amendment so that we can't elect senators, because the problem is that people elect senators instead of the states' governments sending their senators to, you know, by appointing rich white landowners and sending them to Washington. And now that the 17th Amendment made everybody votes for their senator, it's horrible. That's what the problem is. People.
It speaks to their mentality.
Right.
The problem with health care is that people want to talk to their own doctors.
Yeah.
You know, it speaks to their general mentality. They don't think that people are smart enough. That's why they lie to them. They don't think that people should have the right to see a doctor. That's why they don't support health care. It just speaks to that. And, you know, for somebody who is elected by the people, it's foolish for him to think that this would have any sort of impact or that it would increase states' rights. I mean, the idea that allowing state legislatures to appoint senators again would lead to any increased freedom is just ludicrous. You know, the entire purpose of the 17th Amendment was to increase freedom and to give people
right.
direct control over their destiny.
Right. Well, and again, that's what they think the problem is. People should not – look, people are stupid, okay? Let's just clear that up right now. They do – I mean, they're dumb masses that, you know, most of them useless eaters as supposedly his name is escaping me all of a sudden. Architect of the Vietnam War. It's driving me crazy. Anyways, useless eaters in general, you know, and they don't deserve the right – they're not smart enough to government, you know, to run their own government. So they need rich white landowners to appoint their representatives in an old English style. not since Blackadder have I seen that kind of a government
you utter creep.
Be put in place.
I'm sure we could find a few city councils in Gohmert's district that would like to appoint him or his replacement.
No question.
For him.
Yeah, it's ironic that most of them would suggest this thing and then think that they would actually be the choice.
Right.
Now, yeah. Now, you, by the way, you also have a new article on Media Matters. Your most recent post was How to Annoy Glenn Beck in 5 minutes or less.
Right. I got the census questionnaire in the mail, and sure, I thought it'd be nice to have my community get its fair share of federal money for things like hospitals and roads.
Oh, the census.
The police. Right. But one
now
thing
tell us about the census. You're going to actually vote on the census.
I mailed it in. It took 5 minutes.
What a horrible notion.
All the motivation I needed was knowing that people like Michelle Bachmann and
right.
and Glenn Beck would be annoyed if more people did it.
But don't you see that that's part of the greater conspiracy to get you to fill out the census? Is that they in an MK Ultra situation they have sent out these mental defectives with chips in their brains to spout off this kind of stuff because they know it will trigger outrage in you and force you to fill out the census in a way that leads them towards their ultimate goal of being able to provide you with health care at a reasonable rate. I'm sorry, that's where it derails. That's where the whole thing derails for me. Is where the Democrats' plan. Sounds nothing like the Patriot Act. You know what
right.
I mean?
yeah, it's quite ridiculous. I mean, Glenn Beck likened the census to the government slave state. Is this coming from a guy who called the president a racist with a deep-seated hatred of white people or white culture and has said that his policies are nothing but reparations and settling old racial scores?
Right.
Why
code
would anybody
much,
think
or...
that this guy's a racist?
Yeah, code much? That's the amazing thing is that you think he's aiming at a very narrow sliver of the electorate there with that kind of a statement, specifically racist southern white people, the kind that show up on the lawn and spit on black people.
Not just that, but he's appealing to whatever else is out there. You know, the bigotry that people don't acknowledge, you know, when they say I'm just a Tea Party or this has nothing to do with race.
Right.
You know, for centuries in this country, or maybe not centuries, but at least generations, in tough economic times, people have emerged that serve to tell people that the problems they face are the fault of other people.
Right.
People not like you or I. And that's precisely what all this us versus them, the president's a racist, this is about reparations. That's precisely what all of this is about. And that's why you see so much in the Tea Party movement, you know, and frankly the conservative movement, because as David Frum, you know, says, Republicans originally thought that Fox News worked for us,
right.
And now we are discovering that we work for Fox.
I think we actually have that quote from David Frum. Can we play that, Tony?
It sounds like you're saying that the Glenn Beck's, Rush Limbaugh's hijacked the Republican Party.
Well, they got...
And drove it to a defeat.
You know, Republicans originally thought that Fox worked for us, and now we're discovering we work for Fox. And the balance here...
You know, that's a stunning admission from somebody like David Frum.
Right. You know, and it speaks to, you know, the modern conservative movement being completely driven, as he says, by conservative media figures. I mean, just look at CPAC. This year, Glenn Beck was the keynote. Last year, it was Rush Limbaugh.
Right.
And they've driven the intellectuals from the party. There are no more William F. Buckleys left.
Right.
And if they are left, they're not paid attention to. And what we're left with is the cesspool of conspiracy theorist cranks, bigots, people that don't understand the government. That's how we end up with signs that say, "Hands, you know, government hands off my Medicare."
Carl, let me take a break real quick because I want to hold. Can you stick around to the next break? Awesome. I'm talking, of course, to Carl Frisch. From Media Matters for America, senior fellow, which sounds so, so important, and is. You're a senior fellow. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. We'll be right back. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number.
You'll cheer, you'll cry, you might even get a cheap laugh or two.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Have you ever thought about the amount of documents it takes to live your life? Have you ever thought about if you lost it all off your computer? That's why I use Carbonite to back up my computer. I just moved from L.A. to New York, and I didn't even realize how many financial documents, personal documents, emails, pictures. I wanted to update the pictures I have in my apartment here. A listener sent me a one-of-a-kind picture from Life magazine of me and my family from 1964 when my dad ran for vice president. You can't get that picture. picture anywhere. If the moving company lost my computer or there was a power surge, I would have lost that picture and everything else on my computer. Carbonite Online Backup, it's like a miracle. It backs up your PC or your Mac automatically whenever you're connected to the internet. Think of the sheer panic you'd feel if you lost your most important personal and financial documents, your photos, your music, everything you've spent time putting together. Now think of the relief you'll feel getting them back with Carbonite. Ah. But you have to back it up to get it back. And Carbonite is just $55 for the entire year. Plus, right now, I have a special offer for my radio listeners. Listen to this. Just enter the offer code Stephanie for a free trial and 2 months free with any subscription. Why not try it? It is so easy to get started. If I can do it, you can do it. Here's all you have to do. If you're at your computer now, go to Carbonite.com. Use my offer code Stephanie for this free 15-day trial plus 2 months free with your subscription. Don't wait to protect your computer files. Go to Carbonite.com today. Offer code Stephanie. That's Carbonite.com.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph while she's away on vacation. On the line with us still, we have Carl Frisch, senior fellow at MediaMatters.org. We are deep in sort of right-wing madness at this point. The argument has been that, and I don't know if you, did you see the Shepard Smith clip where he had Michael Steele on?
And, yeah.
Yeah. Basically going, really? Armageddon? Really, is that a word you want to really have a conversation about? This is how we're gonna start the debate on this. Is that this is Armageddon? This is, you know, not the Iraq War, not the Afghanistan War, not anything. It's health insurance reform that really is the end of the world.
Right, they've been completely co-opted by a fringe element that used to be relegated to so far outside the mainstream that you rarely ever heard about them. These people existed during the Clinton administration.
Mm-hmm.
They just weren't taken seriously. They had, you know, they did mail order VHS cassettes and, 10-page newsletters with bad typeface and very few images. And so they were out there. But now they have their own radio shows. They have their own TV network. And they're members of Congress.
Right.
And that's what's changed.
Well, it's also, but it's also narrowed. If you look at, polling is much more difficult in that regard than it used to be, because quite frankly, I think a lot of the people who voted for George Bush now call themselves libertarians or independents out of embarrassment,
right,
and in a way to distance themselves from the mistakes that they made without ever saying they made them.
Right.
Instead of saying George Bush and what he did drove me to being a libertarian, and I made, you know, and I'm not comfortable, quite frankly, with the Democrats, they're just pretending that's how they were the whole time.
Right. They couldn't be bothered to speak up during his administration.
Right. Exactly. As a matter of fact, I think they did. They promoted it. They were these kind of any American to question him crowd. And then now that that's not hip or in vogue, they've totally backed away from it. On the floor of the Senate, or the House rather, during the debate about the health bill on Sunday night, you had literally people coming out, like Representative Paul Ryan, who called the health care bill an artificial right and said it was condescending to the American people to pass such a thing. Mike Pence was quoting him and saying the bill was basically means that soldiers in World War II died in vain if it passed.
These soldiers from World War II being the ones that we gave the GI Bill and a number of other things because they had earned it. These
which
are things they were given by the government. It doesn't stop there. I mean, yeah, they were spewing crazy from their microphones, but some of them even took, the lead of the Tea Party people and started screaming at other members of Congress that were Democrats. When Bart Stupak was speaking against a motion that would have caused, another several months of debate, perhaps, one congressman from Texas, Randy Neubauer, screamed out baby killer.
Right.
The idea that there is any distinction between all these different groups, whether it's the GOP as a party, whether it's its membership in the House and the Senate, whether it's these crazy nut jobs that we see at these rallies, there is no distinction. This is what is left. This is the legacy of George W. Bush.
Yep, no question. Carl Frisch, Senior Fellow at Media Matters for America, which is my favorite part of the title of that website. Media
well,
Matters
we wanted to make sure that
it wasn't
everybody
for,
knew where we were. Yeah.
For Europistan or Canuckistan, the Canadian
right.
overthrow of our government. Check them out, MediaMatters.org. Carl Frisch, thank you so much for helping us wade through this nonsense. And I will be back with you on Steph's show next week as well. Always great to talk to you. Fantastic. Thank you so much. Absolutely. We're going to take a break right now. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. We're going to get to some of your calls right after this break. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Thanks for tuning in. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph while she's away on vacation. Coming up in just a little bit, Charles B. Pierce. Charlie Pierce will be joining us, author of Idiot America, to talk about, well, basically the situation we find ourselves in a lot of ways, especially in the argument with the right. But I want to do take some phone calls. Let's see. I want to go by, people who've really been hanging on there. Catherine in Tucson, Arizona. Catherine,
Hi.
Thanks for hanging in. Hi.
Hey. I have a little thing for the attorneys general who are going to sue to preserve the rights of the American people. Whose taxpayer money are you going to be using to pay these lawyers and file these lawsuits?
Exactly.
And these appeals and all the way up to the Supreme Court. It's going to cost more, another chunk on top of the bill. Who's going to pay for your lawsuits? Are they going to pay for them out of their own pocket? And
sure.
while they seek to deny us our medical benefits, are they going to give up their policies in sympathy with the fact that we have none?
Right, exactly. And I thank you for the call. I've got Charlie Pierce on the line in a second, but I do want to say real quick, maybe they can use some leftover money from the Ken Starr investigation. You know, that cost millions of dollars and did absolutely nothing for the country. But on the line right now, Tony, you got to have the theme song ready. It's got to be ready. Charlie Pierce.
There's only one man now that understands, and that's the author of Idiot America.
Pierce.
Charlie Pierce, the funniest writer in the world, from the Boston Globe.
Why is everybody always laughing with me?
Charlie Pierce, thank you for joining us.
Hey,
you there?
Alex, I'm proud to be on the radio with a guy who almost beat Lita Ford playing Rock Band.
Thank you.
People actually watch VH1's 100 Greatest Whatever They Are.
Right, I know. And quite frankly, she got to pick her song. I did not.
Oh,
so
no, you got robbed.
I totally
the man
got robbed.
Is keeping you down.
Yeah.
Actually, it's the woman is keeping you down.
With a real guitar around my neck and a real microphone set at 90 degrees, I can actually sing and play a good deal of Motorhead songs.
There you go.
But trying to do them on an actual, you know, game controller, wrong.
Every musician I know is a terrible Rock Band player.
It's rough. It's but they cut out all the complicated parts, and that's what you spend all your time nerding about and trying to fix. It's dagnabbit. But you know,
playing my music.
Yes, I'll at some point break into Ace of Spades while we're
The Ace of Spades.
How is Lemmy still alive, by the way? Has anyone figured that out?
I think he's held together by dirt. There's a sheen of gunk on his skin. You know, the kind of stuff that's on subway platforms.
Exactly
that,
right.
Right. That
it's the only thing keeping the streets of New York from falling in on each other.
Exactly. It's like the oil that you have to put on a gun barrel so that the metal doesn't decay, you know.
It's a bad time in history to be talking about oiling your gun barrels, by the way.
Absolutely.
There are people out there actually talking about that.
Well, that was, you know, there was a clip yesterday where, you know, one of the guys had called into one of these right-wing shows and said, you know, I am cleaning my rifles. We're cleaning our rifles. Because you want your, you know, when you commit suicide by cop, you want a clean gun. Because that's really what these idiots are amounting to.
It's going to dawn on somebody sooner or later that a great piece of the Republican Party and the conservative movement which animates it are completely out of their minds.
Right.
I mean, has anyone noticed I don't want to minimize the historic nature of what happened over the weekend. This is a pretty insurance-friendly healthcare bill right now.
Right.
I mean, we are not marching people off to government-run health clinics.
Not at all. It's not even close to that. That's the amazing part, is that the conversation they're having most of us are sitting there going, well, that sounds like a good idea, but that's not what's going on.
Right, exactly. They're... I mean, I don't I mean, and I know where it comes from. It comes from the indigestible fried crud they're fed on the radio and TV.
That's
day
true.
After day and hour after
and
hour.
And, of course, in food courts all over the country because, quite frankly, nutrition-deficient brains do not work as well.
But I just don't understand where – and I wrote a book about this trying to explain it, and I still don't understand it.
Right.
Don't believe the stuff.
Right.
First of all, he's not going to come within 50 country miles of gun control.
No.
That's an issue that he's just not going to touch.
And he's not interested in touching it.
He's not interested in it because it's a useless fight at this point.
Yeah.
But, you know, but somehow it all got tied up with he's going to come and get our gun. I mean, and, you know, as, you know, somebody, and as I said to somebody before, I mean, a white woman in Arkansas weeping, I want my country back. You don't need the Enigma machine to decode that.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of that at the bottom of this, too. But,
yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. When you have Michelle Bachmann, who is literally making things up that aren't even present in the conversation. That we're headed, and then calling herself America's Congresswoman on her website. By the way, spelling America, AMARICAS.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
No, that's,
yes.
Maybe that's her country.
That's true. America. She
this
lives
is
now
the country
in,
of my mind. America.
Yeah, this is the country that she and Rush Limbaugh are going to take over when they take over Costa Rica and reform the government to be, you know, built on the blueprint put forth in shock doctrine.
But I just thought it was wonderful that Rush was going to move to a country with fully paid government-run single-payer health care.
After having a heart attack in a state with some of the most liberal and progressive health care available.
Yeah.
Even if he didn't have insurance, he'd have still been treated just fine.
Yeah. But I was willing to laugh these folks off for a long while, but this if I'm the Secret Service, I'm terrified at this point.
Well, yeah. I mean, you got to take this. Now, granted, these are not the, you know, the ninjas of the world. These are people. These are not the, you know, the you know, the Israeli Secret Service that killed the Hamas leader in Dubai, you know, where they, you know, flew down on a wire and dripped poison into his mouth while he slept. And by the way, that didn't work. That was supposed to kill him. That was something they got right out of I think it was Gross Point Blank. And he didn't die. They had to electrocute him. He died of electrocution. They stunned him to death, basically.
Well, that's what we like to call the Rasputin technique.
Exactly.
What else do we have that we haven't tried on this guy yet?
But, exactly. He's still up. He's still walking around.
But, you know, it was remarkable to me over the weekend that you had all these people yelling all these things at the people running into Congress to vote for this, you know, rather mild health care reform. And yet there were 200,000 people in Washington protesting for immigration reform, and nobody saw them.
Nothing. Yeah. Not.
I mean,
and
were they protesting in a, you know, in a part of Washington without TV cameras?
Right.
Is there a zoning law I'm not aware of? You can't bring any TV cameras somewhere?
Is there such a place in Washington, D.C.
I don't think
that
so. That's the thing.
Yeah. I mean, I you know, it's funny that I think when, you know, when London was putting cameras on every street corner, that, you know, the reason D.C. didn't flinch at it and make any statements because that's how you have to have Washington, D.C.
That's right. Well, they've got a very free market approach to that, which is basically everybody's got a camera somewhere.
Right. And what I've always said,
C-SPAN's got, you know, stand-ups everywhere in the city at this point.
Right.
I remember being there in 1998. I was doing a story, and I was in the senator's office, and I was looking out over the, I guess, I forget what office building was, but it was back down towards the federal courthouse, towards the White House. And it was during right when the whole Lewinsky thing blew up for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And all you could see were these little glowing areas of, you know, right in front of the courthouse, and one in front of the White House, and one in front of the Senate. And there were all these little clusters of light going on. And I thought, what a strange place this is to live.
Oh, well, I remember, you know, go to any, you know, I've often said that, you know, it's not Big Brother we have to worry about anymore. It's Little Brother.
Yeah.
It's the camera phones that are really watching us, not, you know, there aren't enough government employees to be able to even do that, even with the supercomputers that can, you know, read our emotions from our faces and all the stuff that we've been taught to fear. It's really, you know, that we're going to end up on YouTube, not that we're going to end up, you know.
You're absolutely right. And in my off hours, I do some sports writing, and this has become the bane of professional athletes.
Right.
Is that, you know, you can't, if you're Ben Roethlisberger, you can't go cruising the bars at the University of Georgia at brucellosis anymore.
Right.
You know, people will take your move, will take your picture.
Right.
But, and then you'll be up on the intertubes for the rest of your life. But,
which is exactly why I like being a comedian, by the way, because I can get away with anything. That's
excellent.
That's the big blessing of being a comedian is that I literally can go anywhere and people can take pictures of me. And if anybody goes, dude, I got this picture of you coming out of this place. I'm like, yeah, take a picture next Wednesday. I'll be coming out of the exact same place. So what? But politicians, however, I think have more to fear from Little Brother than we do of Big Brother at this point.
No, absolutely. They also have a lot to fear from crazy New Age videographers, as John Edwards learned. Stay away from the crazy New Age videographers.
Right. And here's the part that stuns me. And I think, you know, in leading up to, let's say, the Patriot Act, and I've talked about this a bunch today in the last couple of days because this is the most shocking bicameral effect of the right wing right now. Is that, you know, leading up to the Patriot Act, there was a couple of whimpers from people like Alex Jones and, you know, the people who are, really do look at this stuff from a conspiratorial thing going, you know, the removal of habeas corpus, the ability to wiretap without a warrant. All these things are legitimately scary and very anti-American. They go against what really does make us America. And then to have these people come out and say those type of things about health care when they blew that off entirely – just seems so disingenuous at the best and insane at worst.
No, what you're dealing with here is really not. I mean, it's not an ideology in any way. It's a bunch of incoherent emotional outbursts that take place one after another, like little fireworks in the brain, I think. But it really, I mean, the most telling thing of the last six, one of the most telling things for me in the last year, there's a congressman in South Carolina named Bob Inglis, okay? And Bob Inglis is a really conservative guy. Right. And he got up at a town meeting, and everything was going fine, and then somebody mentioned some far-out conspiracy theory. And he said specifically, you know, maybe you ought to turn off Glenn Beck for a week. And he got booed off the stage.
Right.
He's not, I mean, if somehow offending against the Constitution is okay, but offending against a public lunatic who weeps and howls and cries and rattles around the floor on television is now out of bounds for these folks.
It is not fair to attack Glenn Beck.
And now that I think, you know, with the whole repeal thing I'm watching the last couple of days, I think they're caught now because there's some of the stuff they don't want to repeal. Oh, you know, denying the angelic five-year-old medical treatment because he has a pre-existing condition. No, we want to keep that part.
Right.
But we want to get rid of this part, but we want to keep that part.
Right. And that, by the way, is what's called governing. We have to take a break, but can you stick around through the next chunk? Because I'd love to.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Stephanie Miller while she's away on vacation. And I'm lucky enough that Charlie's going to stick with us. So Charles Pierce, right back after this. 1-800-STEP-12. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Kids can relate to this show. These guys aren't phonies.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
See, I can pull that off for real, but in a video game setting, I'm completely wanted.
I think it's Lemmy's vocal range that keeps me coming back to Motorhead. Actually,
absolutely, it's kind of impressive because it's something in the animal kingdom. It's not really, you know, it's not really human.
Right. I don't know how he can be that loud and not have his voice go up or down even a scintilla of an octave.
Exactly. It is all volume. It's impressive. And the funny thing is that I don't think he has any, you know, by the way, I don't know if you know this, he had a contest going with another rocker. I want to say it was Nikki Sixx, but I don't think it was, about who could not bathe for a year.
Oh.
And he won hands down.
Who's the judge, by the way?
Did someone
leap up to volunteer to be the judge?
It was an honor system. Believe me, this is something they can maintain on their own. I think it was a point of pride with Lemmy. I think he viewed it as a relief.
Yes. Lemmy was approached with a challenge, and he said, "Oh, you mean another year?
You mean I don't have to bathe for a whole year?
Another year?
Awesome.
I haven't bathed since the first album came out.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, I could skate through this and win all the way. Meanwhile, Nikki Sixx is like, how do you pluck your eyebrows? Does that count as bathing? I don't know. On the line with us, we have Charles Pierce, who is the author of Idiot America, Hard to Forget, an Alzheimer's story, sports guy in search of corkball, War Road hockey, Hooters golf, Tiger Woods, and the big, big game, and Moving the Chains, and other great works. Now, you are a witness, I think, through your writing of Idiot America, to a trend in this country that is not, this is nothing new. This is, it's the legitimizing of it that's become, that's the new part.
Yeah,
right?
I think you're right. I mean, I do think one of the points I make in the book, and I'm very proud of my country for that. This is the greatest country ever devised to be completely out of your mind. Because you get a hearing. I mean, and it's a good thing.
Right.
No matter how nuts you are, if you can stand up on the street corner and announce at the top of your lungs your own personal brand of insanity, somebody will stop and listen. And that's great. That's part of what makes America wonderful. It's part of how we got a lot of ideas that seemed crazy at the time but sound perfectly normal now. However,
right.
We always were a little bit better at discerning the valuable ones from the completely worthless crazy ones, and now the worthless crazy ones are being mainstreamed. Somebody in the Republican Party has to stand up against this.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see that between now and the election. I think what'll happen is the only chance that that they have, and I mean this in all fairness, is that if they lose again big this fall, that there will be the old soldiers who have been around who will go back to, we need a sensible Republican Party that's actually fiscally conservative, that actually stands up for what principles we used to have, and
right.
can make it a substantive argument. But quite frankly, if the Tea Party, if they make any headway, they win a couple of seats, even two, and give them, change the edge direction, in the Senate, one more seat. They will literally view it as a victory for the Tea Parties, even though it's really a failure long term.
Well, what will scare me is the Democrats will look at it that way.
Right. Well, the media will certainly do it, though, and the Democrats will have – they'll start to fight against it. They'll argue against it for a while and then just give up.
Yeah.
Because quite frankly, when you have, idiots like David Gregory and John King who will, let this kind of stuff float – during the conversation, and then when you try to answer it, they cut you off and go, well, that's all the time we have for that. Well, I mean, Wolf Blitzer's horrible at that part of it.
Yeah, well, I was interested to see Wolf with Michael Moore last night, where Michael Moore referred to capitalism as being, jackals and weasels or something, and Wolf agreed.
Right.
I was all, really? Well, okay.
Well, that's because he's
got some common ground here.
Right. Well, he also accidentally agrees all the time,
yeah.
And then later on goes, that's not what I meant yeah. to say. Ann Coulter, by the way, speaking of being able to talk out of any orifice and allow it to be accepted in this country, Ann Coulter's Canadian tour was just canceled.
Yeah, and I'm not entirely sure I'm happy about that. I mean, she got canceled because of that hate speech law that the Canadians passed, and
right.
frankly, I'm not a real big fan of that.
Right.
I mean,
well,
I would hate to line up with Elvira there, but this time I think she's been done wrong.
It's interesting that they have pretty distinct laws. The English have a similar laws, and they used it to keep out the Phelps crowd when they tried to come
right.
over there and protest the deaths, the funerals of British soldiers,
right.
with the God Hates Fags signs.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where, in this case, where's the harassment started? She apparently they told her, we have different laws up here. You might want to acquaint
yeah.
yourself with our laws.
Yeah.
And she told a Muslim student that if they were having trouble flying, to get on a camel.
She told a Muslim student where? In Canada?
In Canada, yeah.
Well,
when she was taking questions from students, she told a 17-year-old Muslim student to take a camel instead of the flying carpet she previously suggested they take.
I'm not in any way minimizing what she said, but hasn't she fallen into eclipse pretty quickly, though? I mean, she's fallen off the food chain.
Well, the fact that she's touring in Canada.
I haven't heard anything about Ann Coulter in about 6 months.
It's true, and you know why? Because Sarah Palin is eating her lunch.
Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck, and because once you start doubling down on the crazy, it's hard to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And you've got now you've got as you said, you've got Sarah Palin for the right wing flashlight under the covers crowd, and
right.
you've got Glenn Beck for the TV saying nutty stuff with props, no less.
Yeah.
So I think she's been out crazied, and of course she came along to out crazy people like Laura Ingraham.
Yeah.
I mean,
Who,
so the frontiers yeah. keep going out and out and out and out.
Right, and that's where they're chasing this meme down the rabbit hole, and I don't know how they get back.
No, I see. I don't think they do. I think that, you know, and I think that one of the great missed opportunities, and like, you know, I talked, you know, you and I talked a minute ago about how valuable it would be to have a sensible conservative Republican Party again.
Right.
To have for the purposes of national dialogue. The only opportunity to have that is to have the current Republican Party and the conservative movement that energizes it completely collapse.
Yeah.
And it did between 2006 and 2008. The problem is the president got elected on a platform of not giving this rotted superstructure the final push it needed.
Right.
So none of the people that wrecked the Republican Party were held accountable in any way. And so they just doubled down and maintained their own power. And now it's so deeply implanted. You know, I don't think we're going to get another 2006. The 2006 midterms were a debacle. I mean, that was as big an ass kicking as you can get in American politics.
Right.
I mean, absent you know, a president dying or something and having his party, you know, like the 1964 landslide.
Yeah.
But that was as complete and clear and obvious a repudiation. I mean, Democratic senators being elected in Montana, in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in North Carolina. I mean, to have Barack Hussein Obama carry North Carolina and Indiana. I mean, that's a repudiation of a governing philosophy. The problem is the Democrats never let it take hold.
Yeah.
You know,
there was
a certain obligation, I think, on the part of the Democrats to straighten out the Republicans if they weren't going to do it themselves, and they pretty plainly weren't going to do it themselves.
Exactly. We got it. We're up against a hard break.
Yeah, it was great. I'll talk to you. It's good to talk to you.
Absolutely, Charlie Pierce. Everybody, thank you very much. We will be back right after this break. I am Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. We'll be getting to your calls right after the top of the hour. Follow us on livestream.com/Hal Sparks and join in the chat. We'll be back right after this.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome, hello, and good morning to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph while she's away on vacation. She and Chris Lavoie, the boy toy, and Jim Ward are off on vacation. It is myself and Tony, our board op, and Miranda holding down the fort in L.A. I'm out in the New York Bureau. It is 6 minutes after the hour, and on the line with us now is Congressman Gregory Meeks. Congressman, are you there?
I'm here.
Fantastic. And I'm so glad we have you to talk to today because now that, you know, healthcare is up on its feet and we'll stagger through this last process and then really...
It's not going to stagger. We're going to come through strong.
Great. Fantastic. Through the Senate part of it. I mean, the bill itself is now law.
That is correct.
The only thing the Republicans are fighting now are the changes that everybody seems to want, especially in the House. So that's peculiar, but we'll let them be peculiar. They've been doing that very well. But I really wanted to talk with you about financial reform.
Yes.
This is the next big step, and I think the biggest ammunition next to health care that the Democrats have, not only in governing well, but also going into the fall elections. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think both. I mean, clearly something has to be done. We are a year past the worst crisis of our time when the financial services was on the brink, and nothing has been done to prevent it from happening again. And if you listen to what the Republicans are basically saying, they still want status quo. We've got to show that the American public that we're ready to move so that we can protect them and the globe, actually, from financial ruin. And that can be done through this financial reform bill.
Right. That, and by the way, for those that don't know, Chris Dodd's bill, you know, his plan just went through committee, 13-10 on a fairly strict party line vote, but it made it through committee fairly quickly. The Republicans offered no specific amendments during that process, I believe, because they're going to try and hold this up through the amendment process in the Senate. Do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, they've kind of indicated that what they want to try to do is to stop everything. They're the party of no. They want to say no to everything. And so I think they're going to try to hold up the process, again, trying to make it so that you need the 60 votes to get it to the floor once it gets out of committee. So I think that's absolutely their strategy. That's been their strategy all along, is just to try to block everything.
Do you think they're going to come across a moment between now and the election where they'll kind of find religion on this and realize that this is not a good plan that they're going to have to about face? I mean, not voting for this part of it seems insane to me.
I think that from a number of reports that I've seen recently, they are starting to second-guess themselves because of the health care bill, where we went ahead and did what we had to do. And recently, you know, you see that the American people, there's 9 points in a poll showing that the people are in favor of the health care bill. And Democrats now also understand that we've got a lead and show that we can get something done, and we can get it done. And I think the Republicans got to think twice now about just being the party of no, and at least a number of them, and try to figure out how they can work with us with some bills that are significant for all Americans.
Right. I know that they haven't been fans of health care reform. They certainly never, ever produced any kind of legislation along these lines when they had control of Congress and the Senate or the White House. This has not been on their agenda. Magically, as soon as Barack Obama and the Democrats in the Congress and the Senate decide that this is a priority for them, suddenly they have lots of ideas, most of which are incorporated in some sort of sensible way, at least, in the legislation itself that made it through, even though they didn't vote for it. You know, I don't see how they can, but healthcare is something that they can run against to some degree because, like I said, it wasn't one of their solid ideas. But financial reform, there is such a fever pitch about bonuses and bankers in this country that I don't know how you can stand up and obviously, Boehner has. He recently said, don't let these punk staffers bother you to a group of bankers recently. It's clear what side they come down on, but I don't know how you run on that.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think that this is going to be a losing issue for them also. If you just look at the direction that the economy is moving in, it's moving positively, and you can't deny the fact that you have to reform the financial services. We cannot be put in danger where some of the large firms cause systemic risk, which could bring down the global financial infrastructure completely. Anyone with any kind of common sense understands that something has to be done there, so they can't keep saying no. And then when you look at, you know, overall what has been taking place with regards to the economy, under the last 2 years of President Bush, you know, Americans had lost about $17 trillion in wealth.
Right.
But since December and President Obama's economic policies have went into effect, you know, Americans have gained $5 trillion in wealth. So we're moving in the right direction. And it's going to be hard for them to deny that and then not do anything or to say they're just going to continue to be the party of no, which I think will help us also as it will help the country, number one, which is important. But as a result, it will show that we are running the country better than they did for 8 years and put us in great position in November to maintain the House and the Senate.
I think so, too. I think that this sort of uncommon wisdom that seems to be bandied about on Morning Joe and the like, that Joe Scarborough has kind of been pushing, and to some degree Pat Buchanan, is the idea that this is, you know, they're going to run on repealing health care, and this is going to be their winning issue going into the fall, I think is madness, especially if yourself and others who are putting together financial reform make it as big a priority as it needs to be over the next few months. It will eclipse, I think, the health care bill, quite frankly.
Yeah. It is, because it's going to be have a direct effect on the economy and continue the positive spin of the economy, and that's what the folks are going to be looking at. But both, I think that both issues are going to be bode well for us in November. One, when you talk about financial reg reform and you're creating a consumer agency to be the watch over to make sure that we don't have the problem that we had before with bad products for consumers. That's everyone, you know, most voters are going to like that. When you talk about that taxpayer dollars are not going to be utilized for the systemically risk, the too big to fail companies, that they're going to have to put up their own money and that they're going to have and there will be a person to watch over them to determine that they have to wind down in regards to resolution.
Right.
Then you put that together with the fact that immediately with the health care bill, children will be who are under 26 can be a part of their parents' health policy, so they won't be uninsured. People cannot be turned down immediately because of a pre-existing condition. You're going to see all of these positive effects kicking in immediately, and it's going to have a direct impact on the November election, showing that Democrats know how to govern. In less than 2 years, the first year we had to fix the problems of the last 8 years, and
right.
Now the second year we are able to move things forward in a progressive way. I think the American people will respond quite positively.
Well, and obviously they have been in the last just 48 hours. The health care has gotten a 9-point bump just by being passed and signed, which is a great sign. By the way, I'm talking to Congressman Gregory Meeks, who represents the 6th District of New York. You're on the House Committee on Financial Services and the House Foreign Affairs Committee. The Financial Services Committee, I'm sure that there are a lot of different ideas coming, even in the Democratic Party, on how we should approach this, that some are pro too-big-to-fail legislation and some are against. I've said that we can actually have an entirely substantive conversation within the Democratic Party, from the ultra-conservative to the ultra-liberal, that within the we can actually have a real debate on the merits of both ideologies, strictly within the within the Democratic Party, without the Republicans at all, because they seem to have run off into la la land insofar as that they are being sort of ruled by the Tea Party from the right. That they're not even allowed to be part of a conversation that I think a lot of them would actually like to be a part of.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that what this shows is that that Democrats are going to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans have a choice. They can either choose to participate and work with us to come up with some meaningful legislation, or they can choose to stay on the sidelines. It's not going to stop us from doing what we have to do to protect this country. Financially, with the financial reg reform, and as you can see, we did with health care. So the choice is theirs. But we are going to move forward, and we can you're absolutely right, have that dialogue among ourselves. I mean, right now, what we are saying in the House is let the Senate pass a bill on financial reg reform, whatever the bill is, let them pass it, and we'll be able to debate and come together in conference to come up to an agreement that we can make law. Let the Senate pass a bill. The House has already passed a bill. Let's negotiate it in conference, and then let's go put something on the floor to make a difference to protect this country. And Republicans can choose to participate or not. It's their choice. But we're moving forward.
Yes, I can't appreciate and tell you how much I appreciate the work you're doing in this area. And I think it's funny and slightly ironic and a little bit sad that that literally we have to approach the normal legislative process as if it's somehow miraculous. That talking about the Senate coming up with a bill to solve an actual problem, sending it to the House for strict, just committee oversight and debate, and then being voted on and sent back is almost spoken about in a miraculous tone. Like it's something that shouldn't just be, the mechanics of how our government runs, and I appreciate the fact that within the Democratic Party, as much as I have issues with the Blue Dogs and as much as I am not a fan of that conservative end of things, I do think it's good that we are having a complete conversation in the Democratic Party. And I think that is a conversation worth having with the American people as well.
Shows that what we're doing on the Democratic side is more genuine mm-hmm. than what's happened on the Republican side.
Right.
Let's take, you know, the vote on health care again as an example. When you have the Republicans, where there's zero Republicans voting for a bill, you can't tell me that – well, I can tell you because I know from talking to some mm-hmm. of my colleagues who wanted to vote for the health care bill, but because of politics were compelled not to. So
right.
they put in the position of not doing what's in the best interest of the country or what even they think is in the best interest, but they have to stay in lockstep because they think politically that's the best way to do, as opposed to Democrats who are having an honest debate on the issues and some who I disagree with, you know, on the ultimate vote, but some voted differently.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have Republicans time and time again on both the House and the Senate side, zero votes on an issue, that just tells you they're playing politics. They're not trying to do what's right for the country.
No question. Thank you so much, Congressman Gregory Meeks, 6th District of New York, for the great work you do, and not just on the Financial and Foreign Services Committee, but for your constituents as well. I appreciate you having you today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Cheers. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. We are coming up against a break, but we will be back right out of this, taking your calls, 1-800-STEPH-12 or livestream.com/Hal Sparks. And you can join us in the chat room there. There's a meet 351 of your closest friends. We'll be back right after this.
That's the smartest thing I've ever heard anyone say about anything.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I don't know about you, but spring has sprung here in New York City where I'm living. Nothing makes me happier than spring and Easter and Pro Flowers. And this is going to make you happy. 100 blooms of Easter for only $19.99. Plus, get a free glass vase. Upgrade your 100 blooms of Easter to include a premium light blue vase and chocolates, all for just $10 more. That's an incredible deal on a huge bouquet, premium vase, and chocolates. If you've never tried Pro Flowers, what are you waiting for? Pro Flowers bouquets are guaranteed to stay fresh for 7 days. You can't lose. Trust me on this. Here's what I want you to do right now to get this incredible deal available only online. Go to proflowers.com. Click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Enter my password, Stephanie. That's proflowers.com. Click on the little microphone. Type in Stephanie. Don't miss out on this offer. It ends Friday. Order now. Proflowers.com. I'm looking at my 100 blooms of Easter right now. It's making me happy. Come on, get happy. Go to proflowers.com. Don't forget, click on the microphone. Enter Stephanie.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I cannot tell you how glad I am to be talking to you today. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph while she's away on vacation. Steph is at a spa all week. I think that's where she usually goes to recharge. I mean, doing 3 hours of this a day is hard work, quite frankly. And I'm having a great time, quite frankly, because it's made much easier not only by the people who are calling in, and I'm going to get to you guys in a second, but also the people in our chat room who are just awesome, from our constant regulars like GV and Linnea in Sweden and Vampy Vet and Jess Lane and Calais, and we even have Rush Limbaugh is in the chat with us today. I'm guessing that's not the real Rush Limbaugh. I'm going to go out on a limb. We also have Captain. I don't know if I can even. Can I do Captain's full name? Hold on 1 second. I have to turn the over so I have the actual right buttons going on. We have Captain Juice in the chat room, I think, as well. So and follow me on Twitter at Hal Sparks and join in the chat and find out about the show there. I'm also doing a streaming live show this weekend from Gaze of Our Lives, a charity event this weekend in New York City. And then, of course, in week after next, I will be in Philadelphia at Helium Comedy Club doing stand-up. But let me go to some of these calls right now. I've got Mike in Chicago has been hanging on, and as people in Chicago are wont to do. Mike, are you there?
Yeah. Hey, Hal. Great job, first of all.
Oh, yeah.
But,
my pleasure.
I've got a great idea for the Dems, and
okay.
I wanted to bounce it off you and tell me what you think.
Okay.
Seeing that the Republicans have made it very clear they have no intentions on bipartisanship, just to make their heads explode, shouldn't the Dems introduce a bill on the floor which allows gay couples to adopt special needs children and put them on their insurance plan?
Oh, absolutely. And, Yeah. And then, you know, and then run, you know, run on the fact that, and call it something else, though. Call it the, you know, Keep America Free Act. So that they can, so that if they don't vote for it, they get screwed into this corner where they go, the Republicans wouldn't even vote for the Keep America Free Act.
Helping the children.
Right. Start setting the agenda the way they do, where they'll, you know, they'll set the agenda with, by naming these, you know, I Don't Hate America Act or whatever, and then you have to, right. You go, dude, this act actually dumps nuclear waste into rivers and streams, and then the Republicans get to run on the slogan. Right.
But yesterday on O'Reilly, I don't know if you saw it, but he said that he had a hard time believing the congressmen who were saying that they were being spit upon and name-calling because he didn't see any of the videos of this, and he didn't see the congressmen doing the television circuit. And I'm saying to myself, well, Bill, when you were sexually harassing your interns, I didn't see you doing the television circuit, but yet we know that was true.
Exactly. Absolutely. Thank you so much for the call. We got a couple minutes left, and I want to get to a couple other people, and by the way, thanks for being from my favorite city in North America. And I'll get to Rob in Tallahassee, Florida, who's been hanging on for quite a while, too. Rob, you there?
Yes, sir. You there?
Absolutely.
Hey, you know what? I'm first of all doing a great job, Hal, but I want to know what freedoms that I've lost. I haven't lost any yet. And how
yep,
can you,
you can still buy a gun. You can still, yeah, you can still come and go as you please. Yeah, I don't get it.
How can you be pro-choice? Mm-hmm. But you're not willing to help people with insurance that's going to help them stay alive.
Oh, you mean pro-life? How can they be pro-life? Yeah.
Yeah. And that question, I'm still baffled by that.
Well, believe me, they lost me a death penalty. I don't know how you can claim pro-life and be pro-death penalty either. But
exactly.
I think once you start down that road of total bifrenic, you know, compromise of your own ethics, it's hard to come back at all. And again, you're absolutely right. How do you kick people off, you know, how do you campaign against no lifetime caps or no yearly caps on treatment? How do you, how do you campaign against the right of people to keep their health insurance that they have paid for and keep from being kicked off by their insurance company?
You can't do it. It's fighting a losing battle. And here's the other part.
Yeah.
Everybody talks
real
about
quick. We got 30 seconds. So
the Constitution.
Yeah.
But there's a part after we the people of the United States, and what it says after that, it says that you, in order to promote the general welfare and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our prosperity.
Yeah.
The welfare of the people, that is to make sure the people in this country are taken care of. But we could send $1 billion a month for the Iraqis.
Exactly. I'm up against a hard break. Thank you so much for the call, Rob. I'm Hal Sparks. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the
Stephanie Miller
Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph while she's away on vacation. You know, your computer could crash on you at any time. That's right. Any time. Your computer could just go down, and not in a good way, in a negative, frightening way. Yes, that's right. That's why I urge you to use Carbonite Online Backup today. That's what we use here at the Stephanie Miller Show. Don't wait. Steph has a special offer for you. For the special offer, a 15-day free trial plus 2 months free with any subscription if you use the offer code Stephanie. That's carbonite.com, offer code Stephanie. How's that, huh? I did the commercial like I was supposed to. That's right. I know this is normal, boring radio stuff, but for God's sake, it's new to me on occasion. And quite frankly, I don't get a piece of those ads. This is strictly for the show. I'm just taking one for the team. That's, you know, let's be honest. Let's, you know, be completely honest about this old thing. Wonderful. Okay, so I'm going to get to some of our callers that have been waiting on the line for quite a little bit. Let's go to Lawrence in Minneapolis. Lawrence, are you there?
Yeah, I'm going to... How are you doing? Just going to diverge a little bit away from health care, but it actually talks about health care.
Okay.
I'll get back around to it. Let's talk about this poll. 67% believe he's a socialist, 24%.
Yeah, Republicans. Yes, this is a poll of Republicans that says that 67% of them believe that he's a socialist.
Yeah.
20% believe that he's a Muslim.
Yeah, 24% believe he's the Antichrist. 54% believe he's a Muslim. You got to know when these are code words. What these are really code words. You can't come out and say, I don't like this president. I'm afraid of this president because he's black. You can't come out and say that. So what you got to say is, he's a socialist. What you have to do is make up a group that don't make sense, like a Tea Party movement. So what you do is try to voice your displeasure by having stuff like that. Now, here's the thing for you guys, and I hope you listen. Uh-huh. What you guys got to do, and what Obama needs to do, and I think you haven't been doing it very well, is calling it for what it is. The only person I see calling it for what it is maybe Keith Olbermann Chris Matthew and Rachel Maddow. Mm-hmm. You guys must.
I think I've done a fairly good job of basically saying it's straight out racism. We spoke about that earlier in the program today too. But case in point, I hear you what you're saying. I want to get to some other calls, but thank you so much for that. Let's go to Dave in Chicago. Dave, you there?
I am here, Hal. You're going to forgive me for my bad Michael Steele imitation.
Okay.
I responded to something a caller of yours said a little bit ago. There is no inconsistency with being both pro-life and in favor of the death penalty. As you know, Republicans believe that life begins at conception. What we do not widely publicize is that it ends at birth and something else happens.
Right.
And something else is why we don't have a problem. Because when we kill something, it's something else that isn't life. Because, well, as you know, life ends at birth.
Right. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that because you didn't put the word baby in there a bunch of times, it's not. That sounds more like a Michelle Bachmann impersonation.
It's the same zone, baby.
That's right. You got to put basically what I think Michael Steele is really going for is Humpty Hump. I think he's really trying to be,
hey, baby, that's right what we're talking about.
This is, seems to be what he's really going for sometimes. But you're right. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's inconsistent to be pro-life and pro-death.
Yes, and I appreciate the call. You're absolutely right, and that's why I love people from Chicago, not just because I love the city. This is a running issue for them. Is this, you know, this bifrenic, bicameral separation of powers between the left and the right brain, or their ethics and their morals, or their ability to reconcile being completely crazy. And actually having a substantive thought form, I don't know how they do it. It's very strange. So let's go to Dennis in Sacramento. Dennis, you there?
Yeah, Paul. This is Dennis, and you should have your own show, man. You're great.
Oh, thank you. I hope that's because you like what I'm doing, and not because I should get off Stephanie's show because I'm ruining it. That's always my big fear, that I'm going to come in and just blow it. All right.
No. Hey, listen, I know you have some Kentucky roots, and this morning the attorney general from the state of Kentucky was being asked to sue the federal government to pull back HCR, and he said, and I quote, he said, I will not use public funds to fund a political stunt.
Wow, that's amazing.
How about that? Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy. Meanwhile, Bunning, who's our senator, is offering 25 amendments to the financial reform bill that's going to go through, to change the date of implementation back and forth, from one date to another, just to stop it, just to stall it, but that's actually amazing. That I think warrants, I wish I had a country version of this song. Let's hear it for the boy, you know.
I'm glad I could cheer you up.
I appreciate that. That's kind of amazing. I'm going to call my mother and say this guy's actually worth voting for again. Cheers. Thanks, Dennis, so much. Let's go to Abby in San Francisco. Now, Abby.
Good morning, Hal. Hey.
Hi, Abby. I have to play, since you're from San Francisco, we have to play scary music because you and Nancy Pelosi share the same socialist
brain. We do.
Brain.
People from San Francisco really do want to wreck America. That's our whole goal.
It's true. You want to provide health care for America. You want to make sure that children are educated. You want to make sure that cities can form their budgets over the two fiscal years instead of one so that they can prorate their costs for social services out over time. I can't believe it.
Anyways, it's terrifying, right?
So I'm warning everybody to hold their ears while you talk. Okay, there you go.
Okay, so Ray Rachel Maddow had a great, has been doing this great segment called They're Not Embarrassed. I don't know if you've been watching, but.
Oh, I've been watching it. I love Ray. Rachel and I were on a cruise ship a couple of weeks ago for the Progressive Talk Cruise. And not only did we play basketball and shuffleboard together, but we also discussed the lack of shame in a positive sense on that side.
Well,
but go ahead.
It's really incredible. So last night, anyway, she did a little segment on our Randy, is it Neubauer from Texas?
Yes. Newborn, Mr. Neubauer. I keep calling him the same name from the lady with the dogs in Dumb and Dumber. Mrs. Noogie Burger, Mrs. Newborn, yes, the guy who yelled baby killer.
I think you should be able to call him whatever you want, Hal.
Right.
So anyway, he is not only not apologizing for his unbelievable outburst in the congressional chamber, but he's already running commercials on it. He's proud of it. He's counting on his constituents' approval, basically, of this. And the thing that, I don't know, the thing that makes me the saddest, I think the result of starting with Sarah Palin, going through Joe Wilson, teabaggers, et cetera, is that we have ended up with a complete lack of civility. There is just a total lack of respect and decorum. It's gone.
Well, I would say, and I mentioned this earlier, that I do believe that there is a conversation between liberal and conservative going on in this country about what is best to do in regard to these bills and dealing with issues like, you know, pro-life versus pro-choice and dealing with financial reform and dealing with all the things that I think are important, worthy of discussion, an old-fashioned political style.
Right.
But it's all happening in the Democratic Party.
Exactly.
It's all happening between the, you know, Bart Stupak on one far end and the Dennis Kucinich on the other end.
Yeah,
there's an actual conversation that used to happen.
Based on reality. I mean, as Stephanie says, you can have your own opinions, but you cannot have your own set of facts.
No. Yes. And believe me, there's a lot of that going around on their side these days. And I really do think, and I honestly, and this is not just me, you know, being happy about where we are as Democrats as far as governing, but this, I really do feel like this is going to be rough for them going into the election cycle. I think they've overplayed their hand.
Right. And I think that this new Harris poll, I think it shows exactly how far they have gone into
And how afraid they were, and exactly what they were afraid of in this process. So,
right, I hope and pray that that is going to, you know, that just the publication of this kind of poll and these beliefs are really going to scare even more people away from the Republican Party.
Right. Abby, not only are you smart and obviously caring, but you live in San Francisco and you're a decent person. I'm going to get you some other calls.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank
you. Okay, absolutely. Let's go to, Scott in Hersher, Illinois. We got about a minute left, Scott, before we take a break. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Fantastic.
I actually have a question. I'm a very conservative individual, but I'm all for taking care of our low-income people. I think that's our responsibility as good Christians. But I got a phone call the other day from supposedly from Washington D.C. asking me how I felt about the health bill, and I actually had to answer that I didn't know enough about it to even make a comment. But one of the things that I believed that this was going to take care of was like our men and women who have lost their job due to the economy, or people who are too poor to actually buy the insurance to begin with. And this is my understanding, and I hope you can correct me. And that is that. That this bill now says that everybody is to have health insurance, but if you can't afford health insurance, then you're going to have to pay a tax for not having it. But I don't understand.
No, that's I can hear where there's been a lot of that kind of information bandied about. But basically, what's happened is with over 144% of the poverty level, up to 144% above the poverty level, you get a subsidy that allows for you to purchase insurance. And in most cases, you don't even see that money. It just exists. You just will be able to get the service. In the case that you actually have it and that you have to pay it out of pocket, let's say you've chosen an insurance company that you think covers your whole family well and the like, you get it in form of a complete tax break if you make above that. It's basically $88,000 for a family of four is the cutoff point. Anybody below that will get a subsidized plan, and there will be a lot of things to choose from, including co-ops and nonprofits that are available in this system. So no one who can't afford it is going to be forced at gunpoint to pay, you know, by IRS agents showing up at their homes. That's been bandied about a lot. It's a little more complicated on how you achieve it, because they don't want people just grabbing it for free and running, you know, or running to the lowest common denominator in a particular state. You know, when you sign up, there's a little bit of paperwork that goes on, as there should be, to make sure that you legitimately are who you say you are and you make what you say you make. But once that is established and you know, you will be well taken care of. I have to take a break real quick, but I appreciate the call, and I think it's great that you're looking to clarify that part of it, Scott. Yeah, absolutely. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. It is 46 minutes after the hour. We got coming up on our last break. We got a couple of calls on the line. 1-800-STEP-12. We'll be back at that. Livestream.com/HalSparks or HalSparks.com/livestream. Pick your poison. Follow me at HalSparks on Twitter, and we will keep this conversation going. We'll be back right after this.
This whole place just feels like a warm blanket.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Doctor and get rid of it.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph while she's away on vacation. And, it, of course, is Hump Days with Hal. I don't know if you have that queued up there, Tony, but I think I deserve to hear it. Maybe even as we go out when, you know, at the end of the day. But you'll find it. Give me the thumbs up. Okay, fire away.
Steffi.
Oh, what's that heavy breathing I hear? Why? Could it be?
Hump Days with Hal Sparks.
Yes!
All right. I mean, I know it's Hump Days all week this week, quite frankly. I might just play that the rest of the week while I'm here. And Ellie, you're not shut out of the chat over there at livestream.com. You can join us, livestream.com/HalSparks. Join in the chat. We got 348 beautiful people there. Having a great conversation, not only with me on the show today, but also amongst themselves. It's nice to be among like-minded people and share your thoughts. And even if you disagree, it's a great place to actually have a real conversation. And speaking of having a real conversation, I want to go to Rod in Zanesville, Ohio. Rod, you there?
Yes, ready to go.
Fantastic.
I wanted to make 2 points, if I could. And I know that, you know, your show maybe has dwelled on these things before, but you know, when the Republicans were in power and they enacted some legislation that maybe we didn't care for, the thing that we always heard was elections have consequences.
Yeah.
And I think they need to understand that now the same principle still applies.
Well, remember how much they drafted in behind George Bush.
Yeah.
When he was like, I got political capital. I'm gonna use it. That last election really showed that I got political capital. He won by a narrower margin, by the way, than Obama did by far. And and Obama came into this with a lot more, and they acted as if he'd stolen the election. That's the funny part, if you mean disgusting by funny.
Exactly. And then their election did allow them to get a couple of Supreme Court justices.
Right.
That's the way the process works.
Yep, and no question.
If our party had won, we had been able to nominate and put those people on the Supreme Court, so it just didn't happen. The second point I wanted to make, and maybe you can help me with this, is anybody on the left ever take on verbally Rush Limbaugh? Because, you know, the last...
I think so. I mean, I certainly...
That person?
I think Keith Olbermann does it quite a lot.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, he was, and I thank you for the call. I want to be able to get, we got a bunch of other people on the line, but you make some really great points. And Rush, you know, one of the reasons Rush went and took all those pills to lose all that weight or had his stomach stapled or whatever the heck he did that gave him the heart attack because he lost the weight too fast, because kids, you want to take care of your health in a home, you know, in a holistic sort of a way. I know it sounds a little California, but it's true. Was because, Olbermann kept playing the pictures of him when he was gigantic at CPAC last year. Let's go to Ginger in Abilene, Texas. Ginger, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear
me? Hiya. Welcome back.
Thank you. I was calling in to talk about Randy Neugebauer.
Newborn.
He figured, here's a loser, you know, a deadbeat.
Right.
Right. And unfortunately, the way I know this is because he happens to be the representative of my district in Abilene, Texas.
Okay, so it's your fault. I see.
No. I voted against him, believe me. Well, what had happened was the only reason he got his position was because his good buddy George Bush, while he was governor, did some creative redistricting that actually unseated a 26-year Democrat so that he could get in because he was...
And Tom DeLay. That was all part of Tom DeLay's plan, the Dancing with the Stars alcoholic that we all got to see make homophobic jokes about the shoes. Right.
And it's gone on and made it, you know, he's run on being George Bush's good friend, and he's got a lot of support in my district because a lot of the people there are more rural, more racist.
You can say it, dumb. No, I'm kidding. Anti-intellectual. Let's just put it that way.
Exactly.
I believe in down home. Well, thank you, Ginger, and now especially because we know who to blame. all right. Thanks a lot, Ginger. Let's go to because we got a couple minutes left, and I really do want to clear everybody out of here and get these calls. George in South Windsor, Connecticut.
Yes, I just want to say, elections have consequences, but guess what? The Democrats own this. Not a Republican, a congressman didn't vote for this, the House, the Senate didn't vote for this. So the Democrats have all to win or lose by this. So the Republicans shouldn't overplay their hand, but we'll see what happens in the elections coming up in 2010. And that will be the true test. The will of the people will be heard then. It wasn't heard now, but we'll see what happens.
How do you mean it wasn't heard now? What do you mean?
Because the majority of the people are against this health care bill.
Actually, that's if you look at the polls, a good portion, about 30%, want the bill the way it was. Another 30% think it doesn't go far enough. So they were against the bill, but they were against it because they think a more progressive or a more liberal bill is better.
No, they were for reform. And
you had 72% are saying they're for public option. That's why a lot of people were against the bill, because they didn't think it went far enough. They certainly weren't going the Republican route, which is just, the status quo and leaving things up, the way they have been.
Unfortunately, during Medicare Part D, at least there were some Democrats that voted for that. There were no Republicans here. That tells you already.
Yeah, but that wasn't about the bill. That was about a strategy. That wasn't because there weren't Republicans who didn't have ideas put into this bill, because there absolutely were. There were people who sat down with Barack Obama and said, I agree with a lot of what's in this bill. And he said, well, then can you vote for it? And they said, no, because politically they'll kill me. And that wasn't, they weren't talking about the people in their district. They were talking about the Republican leadership.
You can spin this however you want.
I'm not spinning it. I'm telling you the truth. I'm telling you what these actual people are saying. I'm talking about the actual polls. This cartoon idea that these guys are pushing. We got about 1 minute left, and I want to get to Tony in Fort Lauderdale real quick. Tony, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. The problem is with that couple of callers ago about it's our responsibility to provide for these people who don't have insurance. That's the perfect liberal. Secondly, what I want you to understand.
So you don't care. You think we just leave them in the street? That's the idea.
I don't think we actually provide
for it right now.
I don't think that, sir. What I think is that what they should do is to do all these cuts, like in Medicare, wherever they're going to cut, and take that money instead of starting a new entitlement program, then devise a...
This isn't actually... We got to go, because I'm up against a break. There isn't no entitlement program. This is a private insurance exchange. They didn't start single payer. They didn't start any of that stuff. The Republicans are still pushing the same meme they've been pushing for months that was a loser. It failed miserably, and it will continue to fail going into the fall. I'm Hal Sparks. I've been filling in for Steph. Sorry we didn't get to some of the other callers, but we will see you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show. Follow me at Hal Sparks on Twitter, and we'll see you on live stream as well.